The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
For some chin music.
Hey, Yomp, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
Did you think after the save home run, maybe, you know, it's going to be a good night?
Yeah, I never really think that.
Okay.
It's a bat by a bat.
How do you kind of balance what you said, you know, maybe being passive at times, understanding he's filling up his own, but also trying to stick with your own plan and what you want?
Well, if a guy's filling up his own, if you're passive, then you're just doing yourself a disservice. You're wasting your time.
Are you pleased where you're at right now as far as your game total?
Right this second, no, because of how today went. But, I mean, I'm just happy I've been out there every day and I've been healthy and just helping us, you know, have a chance to win ball games. So, gonna have days like today.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, David Haw, Bruce Levine, till 11 o'clock on 104.3 The Score. Pete Crow Armstrong, a little. How would you describe it, Bruce? You're there every day.
Defiant.
Testy.
Defiant.
Now, defiant's a strong word. Why is he so defiant? He's adored.
He's an edgy guy. That's where he gets. So he's competing on the field and off.
You got to set this up because I don't think when people look at Pete Crow Armstrong, fans, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think they see Pete Crow affable, PC affable. He's a guy who is affable.
He's affable. You can be both.
He is somebody who takes time for every kid that goes through there, every fan that goes through there. I saw him exchanging jerseys with Robert Lewandowski this week, the Chicago Fire star.
That's different.
People
in our industry, and I'm as guilty as anybody, have gone from asking questions to making statements and expecting answers.
Okay.
That is the common way now how questions are asked. You say what's on your mind. I tell Pete Crow Armstrong what's on my mind about what I think about him or his team, and he tells me I don't know what I'm thinking about, right? So instead of asking him a direct question like I did, are you happy with where you're at,
Pete,
right now?
I can't believe you.
80% of the questions are statements.
Right. Pete, you had the bat on your shoulder in a key moment, and you struck out instead of getting a hit. Your thoughts?
Well, I already told him he stinks, exactly. Right?
So, but why? How has that evolved?
So what I'm saying is, as a person, nature-wise, he loves kids. He's a very respectful guy to everybody. But when you come to him as a reporter or even probably as a teammate and you say, it's daytime, he'll say, it's pretty close to night.
You're out there as much as anybody, so I'm not questioning you or doubting you. I just don't think it's as evident to people outside of that inner circle as you're suggesting.
He looks at conversation, this is, you know, totally my opinion, like he does competition on the field.
Okay.
He's not accepting things that he doesn't believe are true. And he's honest enough to tell you exactly how he thinks at that moment. He's not in the, let's tell the media something just to get them out of our face, right?
Do you feel like that has shifted a little bit since his experience and altercation with the fan at the rate? Has he been a different, more edgy version of himself?
I think it comes and goes.
Okay.
I believe that his way of being honest is something I really appreciate. Honesty means I can have a conversation with him about something. It can be a tough conversation, and he can correct me and say, here's why your thinking's flawed in a personal way or in a group way, right? And I don't take it personally. I appreciate when an athlete is that honest with me about what he's thinking.
Has he been more defiant, your word, not mine, has he been more defiant this year than last year because of the way maybe the second half of the season went? And the reaction to his decline, and the first time maybe as a professional he wasn't praised and adored?
I think it has to do with partially being interviewed more than other people.
So you think that's worn him down?
Yes.
He also,
no question. He had alluded to it coming back from the All-Star break, where we talked to him the day that they came back, and he said, to be honest with you, you know, I am worn out by all of this after being at the All-Star game, being the darling of the National League because Ohtani wasn't there, and honestly being in this conversation now for being the MVP. Ever since, as you alluded to, the White Sox series, more national attention to him than ever before.
No doubt about it. But that's part of the maturation process, Bruce. If he wants to be viewed as a star, and there's nothing that suggests he doesn't, if he wants to be and he has the ability to carry his team as he has.
Defiant guy by nature. Ray, do we have that bite from last night? Okay, so here's a situation. Late in the game, it's a 3-2 count on PCA, and the other team, he thinks he's walked. The other team calls the ABS system, and he walks to first base before the outcome.
That was cool.
Here's Pat Hughes.
Steps of the 3-2. Strike three. Pete wants to challenge that. Pete is backpedaling to first. He wants to challenge that call. Pete looked very confident of that. He's at first base, but it was a call of strike three. Right at the knees. Just did get the strike zone, and that's out number two.
Yeah, it's fastball in the middle of the plate, but right at the bottom of the zone.
Kumana, as always. But
does that explain anything to you about our conversation?
Yes, it does. But you know, Bruce, you don't
it's
want.
It's defiant.
Well, okay. You know what though? Right now, at this stage of Pete Crow Armstrong's career,
I love it. To be honest,
yeah,
with you
don't want to diminish that.
I don't think defiant is a
so
negative.
So you're not complaining. You're observing.
No. Okay. It's part of who he is, right?
I agree.
And what you know, he's. When I asked him, are you happy with your play? And he answered that the last bite that we played out of that montage that Ray put together so well. He said, I'm not happy right now. I had a bad game, right?
Yeah.
But in general, maybe I'm happy considering he's putting up these crazy numbers for the last five, 6 weeks.
Even that cut, though, Bruce, and you heard it maybe a little bit more aggressively than the rest of us heard it. And I think this is partly why. You can read him better than we can. You're around him more. So actually, you guys are like, when he says a little bit with a little tone, I may detect it. Oh, that sounded a little bit. And you're like, oh, man, he's ticked off. Because you know the tone better.
So the attention to detail in the moment is what Pete Crow Armstrong is. And that means giving it all his emotion, all his energy, and now learning how to use controlled emotion by not losing it every time he strikes out, by not getting upset when things don't work out.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing the maturity of a young man as a person and as a player all at the same time.
But I don't want him to lose that edge.
No, I'm not asking for that.
And I don't think that it's a problem. I don't sense any. This is not.
No, but see, the difference is it's really cool when you're the best player on the planet. But when you're the version of what you were the first 6 weeks of the season or the last 2.5 months of 2025, everybody thinks they have a solution it's not cool.
It's a fine line you have to walk. The reason he becomes the best player in baseball is because of that attitude
and
confidence.
But we only kiss their butt when they're doing great.
That's okay, but you understand. But that goes with the territory. That's professional sports.
I understand, but you know, dealing with who Pete Crow Armstrong is more interesting than all that. That's why we're doing this segment, because he is a fascinating individual to talk to, a guy that I consider, you know, a friend as much as a media person and a player can be.
Well, I think
friends.
He's very good with you. I think he shows you respect.
But he's also is hard on me when I say something he doesn't agree with or thinks is dumb, as he is with anybody else.
But has he been disrespectful with you?
No.
So I don't think that's a problem.
No, because he gives full attention and full energy to everything he does, including being asked questions or playing center field.
Well, he is a catalyst to the Cubs right now, and he has been since they moved him to the leadoff spot. That's another move that Craig Counsell made this year that is, I don't want to say gone under the radar, but he deserves credit for making.
There was some desperation.
Of course.
Because he hadn't earned that yet, okay?
No.
All of a sudden, it's just like, it was soon, if I'm not mistaken, soon after the White Sox situation.
A little bit after that.
Within a few days.
When he did that, when they moved him into the leadoff spot, was Pete Crow Armstrong, to your knowledge, lobbying before that behind the scenes?
Never.
Because he came into the league, he had always let off at every level, correct?
No. He wouldn't do that with Craig Counsell. He has so much trust in Craig Counsell and respect that he would never tell him where he should bet.
So he homers again last night. Pete Crow Armstrong continues to carry this team. I think when you describe the Cubs of a lineup full of guys where everybody is having a down season offensively, that's accurate except for the exception, Pete Crow Armstrong. Is that enough in the context and when we look at Shohei Ohtani could be not pitching the rest of the season, could be taking some days off if they're resting him for the playoffs. Is there a path? How realistic is it to look at this and say Pete Crow Armstrong feasibly could be the MVP this season?
I don't see why not. I mean,
a lot of voters are going to go straight Ohtani.
Why?
Because he's not only the best player in the game, he's one of the best players in the history of the sport.
Who cares? It's about 2026.
You're unimpressed.
What's he doing right now? He's not pitching anymore. I doubt they don't pitch the rest of the year.
I doubt that he pitches the rest of the year, too. I mean, why? Once they get Scooble, he won't have to.
Is this knee injury going to impact his hitting or availability?
I don't know the answer to that, but I think that as they sort of protect him and maybe preserve him for the playoffs and another World Series run, that could be the opening that Pete Crow Armstrong goes through if he can continue to show the discipline at the plate, which is unbelievable, the transformation and the power that I think every MVP candidate
needs.
Look,
if he continues to be a 6-WAR player, that's what most of the voters look at now.
By the
right?
way, how about those catches the other night? I know he made an error this week, didn't he? But yeah. Everyone kind of overlooks that because those catches, the one that he turned just gently into the wall and then let the ivy kind of soften the blow.
So a lot of baseball fans are getting an education in range, right? Outfielder range. And, you know, Buxton of the Twins was phenomenal early in his career. He could cover as much ground as Pete. But Pete does it now in a way that it makes it kind of look easy.
It's
right?
effortless, but it's not. He glides,
right.
And he looks like it is effortless, but it's not because he's covering so much ground. You know that he's digging in. He just has a way, like the great athletes do, of making the difficult play seem routine.
I mean, it's so the White Sox have a top 10 center fielder in Tristan Peters.
Mm-hmm.
He's been outstanding. But when you try to line him up next to Pete and say, is this, you know, what is this compared to this? And Peters has been a revelation for the White Sox. He has helped them win tons of games because of his defense as well as finding his bat.
He's been an upgrade in center field, and they traded Luis Robert Jr.
My point, David, is this. When you compare the two, it's like this guy is playing in another league. Pete Crow Armstrong plays in another league, and Cub fans are the beneficiaries of watching one of the great defenders in the game right now, who should be an automatic platinum gold glove winner this year.
He's the only player in baseball that has more than 20 home runs and at least 20 steals. He's on his way to another 30-30 season.
And he's kind to children.
And he's kind to kids, just not Bruce. Just edgy to Bruce. I don't mind him being edgy to you. I don't mind him showing that. I wonder if it bothers anybody else or if they've even detected that. 312.
I told you it doesn't bother me.
644-6767. You do like it. I know you. You brought it up because you thought it was I don't want to say a shift in his personality, but certainly a big part of his success.
So last May, a year ago May, I'm in a scrum with him and like 10 other media people, and he's leading the world and everything. And I asked like 3 out of the 4 questions that were being asked. And afterwards, he grabs me and he goes, "Don't you think you should let someone else ask a question?" And I thought about it and I said, "Thank you." You know, I said, so here's a 23-year-old guy telling a guy that's been around for 45 years, you know, helping me with my job.
That's confidence.
God knows, you know, I need that help, as everybody knows right now.
630, the maturity at the plate is cool to see. He has harnessed discipline that Javi Baez could never do and is taking him to the next level. That's a fascinating comparison because Javi Baez, it was
never
similar
walked
to Pete Crow Armstrong in that he was the last player this exciting.
Never walked.
Javi Baez never learned that skill.
No.
He never developed that discipline.
Pete now has almost doubled the amount of walks he had last year and is probably by the end of the year going to double the amount of walks that he had for his career.
So Craig Counsell has been on this station talking about marveling at his ability to do that in season in the midst of his career because he's never really seen it to this degree before. To what do you attribute that to? Because this is somebody who at the top of his game or in the midst of just before his career is about to take off, developed that discipline he didn't have before.
So he has greatness within him. 5 tools and the 6th tool that nobody ever talks about, between his ears.
Smart player.
But maturing,
yeah,
so that his skills take over for his emotion.
Do you think that, or I guess, how much did the contract extension, the fact that here he is signing for generational wealth, his parents there, making his family proud, all of those things, he comes into the season and is more disciplined than he's ever been?
I think it helps in general because at the Cub convention, he was one of our guests, and I walked away and I said, "Are they getting this contract done?" And he goes, "Gee, I sure hope so. I've just been thinking an awful lot about it." So you can tell it's helped him just calm down. But I don't think you'd see any other version of him. I mean, the greatness in him is going to come out anyway.
Good reaction on the text line, 630. With regard to PCA, when I talk to my friends and family around the country, the perception of him is still he's a hot-headed punk. Okay. Here's another one, 309. PCA is being a generational athlete. As such, I wish baseball had a most improved award. I don't know that he was most improved. That would be
closest to that is comeback player of the year.
But I don't think he would be that even.
No.
He was an all-star last year. He had a tough second half.
Yeah, it was an awful second half. It was among the most awful in baseball. And that's why watching him begin the year not good, there was a lot of question marks about, is he going to retain that ability?
847, his walk percentage increase is historic, has not been done since the 1950s. That is remarkable. The way that he has transformed that part of his game into developing such a keen eye.
So, David, I always said this, that he's more impactful for the Cubs on the bases than he is hitting home runs. Mm-hmm. Counsell always tells me I'm totally wrong, that he's a home run hitter and that his major impact's going to come via the home run.
Well, maybe next time you should ask him a question instead of making a statement.
You know, when I argue with Counsell, I usually lose because his science is much better than mine. My gut tells me that when he's on base, he creates more runs, right? He creates havoc for the defense. He creates openings on the field for the other hitters. He creates innings, right? The home run it's one swing of the bat, it's over with,
well,
right?
Last night it helped.
The guy on the base,
yeah,
That's a different dynamic.
I get it, but the fact that he can do both makes him an MVP candidate. But last night, no doubt, they needed the home run. That was a big run in a 3-2 victory.
Well, Council, you know, always tells me in this league, the way it goes right now, you have to have guys that hit home runs because you're going to lose games because you get out homer.
He loves guys who homer. You told me that the other day. Yeah. I asked you a question about Michael Conforto, and that was your answer, and I agree with that. Craig Council loves the guys who go deep.
I think all managers like it and understand it. Part of the White Sox big success from, as the caller pointed out, April 17th on, was they were getting the big home run ball from Montgomery,
yes,
from Murakami, from Vargas, you know.
Those were the days.
And Murakami, that hot streak, I think Will Venable alluded to it yesterday. He feels it's coming.
Let's hope it's coming. He hasn't homered since May 27th. He missed 6 weeks, of course, but it would be nice to see him go deep. Bruce, before we get to a break, a couple quick Cub questions while we're talking Cubs. Explain the James Triano's up, Kevin Alcantara down decision in terms of the transaction yesterday, and Craig Council's comment that basically Triantos is here, but it doesn't mean he's going to play.
I have no idea. I know Alcantara, I don't think they feel he's a major league player at this point. Triantos, unless somebody gets hurt, he's not going to play, okay?
That was Council yesterday. He was very open about that.
I mean, they have a player in front of him.
Dean, as far as the backup center fielder? Oh, well, yeah, he's a utility guy. Yeah, Triantos is a utility guy.
Right.
He can play a lot of different roles, but he's not going to play instead of Ramirez.
Yeah, Ramirez is a good player.
Yeah.
And he's the number one infield utility guy. I don't know what Triantos actually does.
So, speaking of utility guys, what is the latest with Matt Shaw, and how does his health uncertainty factor into their trade deadline decision making?
I don't think he can be traded. I don't think they want to trade him. His wrist hasn't healed properly, so he's not able to do baseball activity really yet. As far as his future, they love where Shaw was going, and he proved he can play the outfield. You have two potential free agents in Suzuki and Happ. After that, who are your outfielders in the organization?
Well, they're not here yet. You've got free agency. You've got creative team president to make a trade. I don't know that.
Matt Shaw is a starting outfielder for you next year.
Is he?
As it stands right
really?
Now.
Really? Right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at the calendar, Bruce. It's July 25th.
Well, again, are there answers in the system? I would say not right now.
That's part of the problem with the trade deadline. You don't have a lot to offer in these mega deals that you want to make Mason Miller.
So,
or whoever.
So the Class A and Class AA players are the guys you should keep your eye on as well. Okay. Those are the guys be involved in trades.
260 with a text. This Sox fan has zero critiques of PCA. He's an exciting young talent who has room to mature emotionally because he is young. That's a good contribution there. 708. Some of PCA's best contributions yesterday were when it was a 2-0 count. His presence led him to being walked, subsequently then a bases loaded walk that shows his greatness.
I think, you know, all he learned out of that is do not argue with a female White Sox fan.
Well, he had a tough lesson to learn, but he is now in a position where making a run for the most valuable player in the National League. When we come back, time to shift to White Sox. Steve Stone will join us here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Vasquez throwing out the first That completes the strikeout, and that's gonna do it. White Sox had a 5-0 lead into the sixth inning, and they will lose this opener to the Astros 9-5.
Yeah, this was a tough one because you come off a great road trip, you take that early lead, and unfortunately, for one of the few times in a long time, the bullpen let this one slip away. So, one of those things, you got another one tomorrow and one the day after, so get your rest and I will see you then.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 104.3, The Score. That indeed was a tough one last night for the White Sox, 9-5 losers to the Astros after an 8-run sixth inning. And thank you to CHSN for the highlight from that. And now we go out to the Score hotline and welcome in Chicago Sports Network White Sox analyst in the booth, a familiar voice and face to everyone in Chicago. Steve Stone joins us here on The Score. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Fine, David. And yourself?
Doing well. Bruce and I are trying to figure out what happened last night to the Sox. That was the first time in a while the bullpen really let everybody down and the bottom fell out. I think that was as bad of a loss as the Sox have suffered in some time.
There's no doubt whenever you get that far ahead of a team and allow them back in the ballgame, it's going to be disappointing. But the team has played very well, a lot better than most people thought they would play to this point. And the bullpen occasionally will have a letdown. Last night was one of those occasions. It hasn't happened much, and one of the reasons why the Sox are three games up in the loss column over the Guardians is that the bullpen has been that good. So you say it's one of those nights, and you go get them. This is an everyday game. There's 60 left. We know that. So we're not exactly dwindling down to a precious few. There's still a long way to go, but it's well past halfway into the season, and the Sox still control the division.
Steve, David and I have had the ongoing conversation this morning about if you're the White Sox, you're certainly going to try to add pitching, whether it's starting pitching or bullpen, but you only have so much inventory you prefer to use within the framework. If Chris Getz and his people came to you and said, Steve, where should we go? Should it be starting pitching? Should it be bullpen help? We can't get both. Where would Steve Stone go?
Well, I believe you have to go to one more starting pitcher. I think that's one of the refrains of most teams that are going for it is, boy, if I could get one more starter, I'd be in pretty good shape. The problem being that just about every one of these teams that's currently making a run at the postseason is probably saying just about the same thing, although I see that Mason Miller is probably number one on everybody's hit list because he can dominate the back end of a bullpen. You don't have many more guys out there that are available as he will be, but I would think the Sox are not going to take a farm system that they took a while to develop and developed a pretty good one. Obviously, with 13 major league debuts, we're seeing something a bit special on the Sox this year as far as the system is concerned. I don't think they're going to decimate that system and go and mortgage everything that you've worked for the last few years. But they might nibble around the edges a bit and try to add someone here or there. My feeling is that a starting pitcher would be preferable. I think eventually McDougal's going to get here, and they've talked about him out of your bullpen. I don't know if Hagen Smith has thrown enough innings or gone deep enough into games for him to be considered a starter down the stretch. So he's another guy you might be able to use out of your bullpen. But, you know, that's two young guys that's down the road. I think there are a whole lot of guys available. And one of the things that just popped up with the injury to Teal is, Shea Langeliers appears to be on the market. And that's a catcher who can produce a whole lot of offense. And he's one of the guys that I think a lot of teams will be looking at.
So, Steve, obviously, in as many people as you talk to, whether it's fans or people in the game, you know, there's a risk-reward calculus that Chris Getz is weighing here. The risk of unloading a top prospect or using top young talent that not at the major league level yet, taking a chance that they might develop into great players elsewhere for the reward of the immediacy, the need that you have now, and the reality that the American League is up for grabs, and maybe in this crazy game that this is a season where the Sox can go deep in October. How would you address that conversation or answer those questions if people come to you?
Well, I think you've got to sit down, number one. You know, the best evaluators are the guys that can evaluate their own system. that's first and foremost. If you can evaluate your own system, then you have a tendency to make better trades because you're not going to trade away that future star. You're going to trade away that guy who looks like he's going to be a star but doesn't quite pan out. For many years, the Dodgers made that an art form, and they did it off of numbers from Albuquerque, specifically with first basemen. Guys like Greg Brock and Franklin Stubbs come to mind. These are names in the past, certainly, but that's what the Dodgers used to do. They would trade you the next great power hitter off Albuquerque numbers, which is a launching pad. Then you would get him, and he didn't quite turn out. But they were able to evaluate their own system very well, and I think the Sox have done a pretty good job of it. So this is something that every general manager is figuring out. You said it's a tough decision for Chris Getz. It's also a tough decision for just about each and every one of these guys that appears to be in it, because unlike most years, there's not a lot of definitive teams right now that are, they know they're going to be in it for sure. There's a lot of teams that are hoping they're in it, which means a lot of general managers are being put to a pressurized situation that's coming to a head here in the not-too-distant future. My feeling is that you have to go for it, but not at the risk of tearing apart your entire organization. I'm not going to trade two or three prospects. And by the way, that's become one of the more difficult things to do, is to get prospects in abundance for that one guy you have to trade. The Garrett Crochet trade comes to mind. Was a great trade for the White Sox, and I think it'll continue to be a great trade as we move down the road. You're not going to see too many of those, I don't think, any longer. There was three number ones in that deal. I'm not sure you're going to see a whole lot of teams do that to try to get to the postseason.
Evaluating the catching position, as you alluded to, and the idea that you have in Teal, a guy that's had three injuries, as one of our texters reminded us, or callers reminded us, were non-related to contact with other player injuries in 1 year, and another catcher who has really not done anything close to what people expect him to do in Carroll. How would Steve Stone look at the catching position for the White Sox moving forward, and how would you address that situation, not only for the rest of this year, but mostly toward the future?
Well, I think, Bruce, that you have to take a look at what exactly it's going to cost you, because it's pretty easy to say, we could use a catcher. There's no doubt that Adley Rutschman is out there. That's one of those guys. But, you know, they're going to cost you a whole lot to get the former 1-1, which Rutschman was. So I would look at it, and I think they would still say that maybe these are young catchers' problems as far as Teal is concerned, and next year he'll be back and ready to go. Hopefully it'll be sometime at the end of this year, but, you know, it takes a while. When you start missing a month at least, and then you're expected to get your stroke back to be productive in the major leagues, that doesn't happen all that often. So let's look ahead toward next year, and I'm not sure there's a whole lot of number one catching prospects in this organization at this point. But again, with the idea of mortgaging your future, I'm not sure that's going to happen. So maybe Langeliers would be out of the conversation, because I think he's going to bring a great deal on the open market. You get a catcher with the potential to hit 30 home runs, more times than not, that guy's going to cost you a bundle.
Joined by Steve Stone here on The Score inside the clubhouse on Saturday morning. Steve, over the past month, why has Sean Burke emerged as what looks like the Sox ace? And why has Davis Martin begun to level off a little bit?
Well, I think two different reasons. Number one, Sean Burke made a conscious decision that he was going to simplify his motion. He's another one of these big guys, and at times, big guys have a problem with repeatable motions. I think you're seeing that with Noah Schultz at this point. Granted, they're at different stages of their careers, but repeatable motion is the key. I think when you look at Sean Burke, you realize that at one point he was highly thought of in this organization. There's a lot of people that felt he might have had as good a stuff as anybody else. Then he got hurt, got set back, and now he's at the point where all that confidence that he had at one point is back again. And now he's throwing strike one, and now he's trusting in his stuff, and now he's believing that fastball is going to be a major weapon for him. despite the fact that it's not 98 or 99 or triple digits, but it's 96 consistently, 97 with movement at the end, which because of his motion has given him that little extra hop at the end of that fastball that takes it off the sweet spot. So that confidence has allowed him to go with his fastball, use it as his main pitch, and come away more times than not with a particularly good outing. I think for Davis Martin, what he's experiencing is a full year of being a starting pitcher, and he's going to probably fly by his amount of innings, which was an all-time high last year. I think sometimes you develop some arm fatigue, and I think that's probably what he's used to. But the last time out, he lost a 1-0 game. Last night for five innings, he was terrific, pitched out a couple of jams before hitting that bump in the road in the sixth. So I think more times than not, that's a little arm fatigue for a guy who hasn't been through it a whole lot. And in order to be able to know how to get through it, you have to actually go through it. And this is probably going to be the first time where he throws a full season from start to finish. At least we're hoping that's the case, because still at his best, he's still very good.
Steve, handling bullpens have changed so dramatically for managers now that, you know, it's hard to look at teams on a daily basis, even when you watch the Cubs and Sox like we do, and define anybody's role as eighth inning guy, ninth inning guy. We see managers now like Chris with Council and Venable, who have a scientific approach to each game about who they're going to use and when they're going to use them. Is it the ever-changing way baseball is going with more of the technical side and the all the interesting stuff that is given to managers every day, or is it out of desperation sometimes that people are being used in different positions than we're accustomed to?
Well, I think what's happened is you don't find that back end, that guy, that Dennis Eckersley guy that's going to pitch one inning. It's going to be at the back end. It's going to be to record a save or to end the game, and that's going to be our guy. Most people don't have that, and so you have a situation where sometimes – Major League managers take a look at the seventh inning, sometimes it's the eighth inning, and they say, okay, this is the heart of their order. So this, for me, is an idea. If I can get through this, if I can use maybe the guy that I use to close on occasion, if I can use him here and get through this part of the order, especially if you've used one of your top pinch hitters earlier than the eighth or ninth inning. When you see that and you know that there's no way they can flip their lineup and then make it really difficult for your closer, then you say, okay, let him get out of this inning, and then I can bring in a guy who's normally not a closer and get the job done. I think Hudson is one of those guys that has been shown to be able to work at the back end of a game and be very effective doing it, because he wasn't one of those guys when they brought him over here who they thought would be capable of doing that. So sometimes you get the opportunity, and sometimes you come away looking a whole lot better. I mean, look at what Hicks looks like at this point. I mean, I realize he's not pitching at the back end, and maybe when eventually he does, maybe it won't come out like it's coming out right now, but right now he's unhittable. I mean, this is a guy who's had a great arm for many years. This is his fifth stop as far as teams are concerned, and it seems like the light has turned on. He's throwing the ball great. Hopefully that continues, because he could be an option at the back end. But managers, you're right, Bruce, managers are using guys in different scenarios depending on how they feel the game is going to play out. They might feel that in the seventh inning, this could be my save, or the eighth inning, this could be my save, instead of just the last three guys up in the ninth. And that's especially true if you've emptied the bench of a couple of your premier pinch hitters before that time when you're trying to win a game in the last inning.
Final moment we have with Steve Stone here on The Score. Steve, when you look at the Sox where they are, they easily could justify prioritizing winning over development. And I wonder how that will apply to what comes next for Noah Schultz. He has struggled, and there might be seasons where you say, okay, keep sending him to the mound every fifth day. This might be one of them where you might wonder if another pitcher might give you your team a better chance to win. How do you look at that?
Well, I think Noah's really struggling, and he's struggling from the same thing that if you go back and look at the early statistics of Randy Johnson, you'll see a similar type pattern. I mean, the year that Johnson was traded from Montreal to Seattle, he had 96 walks in 160 innings. That's just not, that's untenable in the major leagues. You're going to lose when you do that. And he was a guy that was 6'10", same thing as Noah, having a hard time repeating his delivery, same thing as Noah. At the same age that Noah is, he was having a hard time getting the ball over the plate consistently. They knew the stuff was there. However, he couldn't throw strikes consistently, couldn't get ahead, and consequently he was giving up a lot of hits to guys who he later on was able to wipe out by throwing strike one. I think eventually Noah's probably going to get there. I'm not sure exactly if it's going to be this year or not, but again, use this as an exercise in understanding the plight of the man who's, you know, 6'10". Is take a look at the early years of Randy Johnson. You'll see very similar numbers to what you're looking at for Noah Schultz. And it took him a while to get it together, but when he did, he was unhittable. And I'm not going to tell you that Noah Schultz is going to be Randy Johnson. I'm just telling you that at 6'10", it creates some problems that a guy at 6'3 doesn't have.
Steve, thanks so much for your time. Keep up the great work.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good show, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Steve Stone from CHSN back in the Sox booth tonight. The Sox take on the Astros. Hunter Brown against Sean Burke, 6'10". At the rate in baseball coverage on the scores presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years, guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that. Back to wrap things up on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you see Murakami Mechanical?
I think he's in a good spot. You know, he, I think the last couple games saw him get that leg up and get ready a lot earlier. So to me, you know, that's a good sign that he's putting himself in a much better position, that the timing is getting closer and closer. We've seen putting more balls in play. You know, hasn't clicked that one yet, but he continues to put himself in a good spot. And along the way, he continues to make really good swing decisions and takes his walk.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Will Venable on Muney Murakami. Bruce, Muney has not homered since May 27th. The Sox are coming off their worst loss in weeks. Tonight would be a good time for a moonshot.
I think he's going to hit two. He looks close. Wow. He looks close, and I think, more importantly, no matter what I think, the White Sox need him to start carrying the offense again.
He has not been... He has just not been a factor. We're obviously
home run derby.
Seeing. Well, I don't think that we had
20
a texter,
at bats. 20 at bats.
People said, "Well, that did that mess up his swing?" I think it had no effect on his swing.
I don't think so.
He was
either.
Celebrated as he should have been. He had earned that designation, and I think he enjoyed himself. Now it's time to start hitting again.
Well, again, finding your timing and being comfortable out there as a hitter. It's almost like going through a second spring training for the amount of time he missed.
The fact that they have been as good as they have been without him and then with him and not really producing.
I mean, they were actually under 500 without him.
17 and 18.
Yeah.
He's come back. They won two series on the road. They are now trying to win this series against the Astros at home. They play better at home, and Muney needs to get going. If he can't, then Will Venable is just going to have to continue to push the right buttons. And he has done so, Bruce, well enough that I think that as we sit here on July 25th, Will Venable is the front runner for the American League Manager of the Year.
I don't think there's any question. And if you want to throw Getz into Executive of the Year on the 25th of July, they're both
I'm going to wait on that leaders. One. I'm going to wait on that one. I will let you know how I'm leaning August 4th.
Oh, I didn't say they're both going to win.
I'm going to wait to weigh in on Chris Getz and whether or not he deserves that into August 4th because I want him to stay aggressive. I want him to thread the needle. I want him to make the move that puts the Sox over the top, and I think it starts with starting pitching.
Isn't it good enough to have 13 guys make their debut and have impact on the team in 2024?
Not if they let go of the rope, and in August and September, they end up under 500 and – In third place. No.
David, they lost 102 games last year.
I'm saying no.
Okay.
The expectations are funny.
Harsh critic.
That's not harsh. That's realistic. The Sox are in a position now to stay above 500 to finish that way this season. They're good enough to do so. They're good enough now to justify prioritizing winning over development and making a move at the deadline.
You're a greedy guy. If I would have told you in spring training they'd be at 500, you told me, oh, you know, stop drinking so much while you're down in Arizona.
I would take 500. 500 in this year's American League will win the division.
No, but if I would have told you the White Sox were going to be 500, nobody predicted them being above 500 or a playoff-bound possibility. Nobody.
That's true.
Zero.
That's true.
The White Sox, I talked to Venable again yesterday about it, and I said neither you or Chris would put a number on how many games the team would win. We asked you multiple times. He said, well, frankly, we had to see, just like everybody else, how the talent played. We knew we had a more talented team, but we didn't know any number. We didn't have any idea it would be 90 or 70 or 60. And, you know, rightfully so, we still don't know what that number is going to be.
Well, I think that he's smart in not establishing a number. He's smart in the way he's handled everything. I think that's why he is who he is. He's got an even temperament, and this team needs that. And they have benefited from it.
Steady you know leadership. Who doesn't always have an even temperament?
Who's that?
Steve Rosenblum,
oh, yeah,
who follows
he's
us
up.
Next.
We got to get out of here. That's right. We're just having fun talking back and forth. We have a lot of people to thank, beginning with Ray Diaz, who is in here on a Saturday running the show impeccably well. Thank you, Ray, for your help. Thank you, Bruce, for setting up our guest, Steve Stone. And thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Inside the Clubhouse since 9 o'clock.
Talk to you 7:25 on Monday morning.
Looking forward to that appointment radio. Cubs and Sox back in action tonight. Skeens and Shota right here on the Score. That is appointment radio. You want to listen to that right here. Pat, Ron, and Zach out in Pittsburgh. We'll be back Monday morning with Mully and Haw at 5 o'clock with the pregame show and Dustin Rhodes. Keep it right here. Steve Rosenblum is next. Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.